Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Unleash Your Extraordinary Potential.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the sky.
The truth is that we are all born with extraordinary potential to do anything we set our minds to and be anyone we desire to be. The problem is that we create self-imposed limitations. All of the great leaders and change makers and rule breakers started with a dream, a vision. Extraordinary potential is often invisible, but we all possess it. We all have the power to shift from potential to reality. Don't you owe it to yourself, to your family, to your community, and to the world you live in to unleash your extraordinary potential today? I am so excited to have Jeffrey Celeron joining me in the studio today. Jeffrey has unleashed his extraordinary potential and helps others do the same. He presents the no fluff truth on how to create and sell your profitable full-time coaching business. He has created the Ultimate Startup Guide for Coaches, which you can find a link to on this page. So today we are going to find out how Jeffrey has created his successful brand, and with any luck, he will share with us his own secret recipe for creating and selling your own coaching business. Hi, Jeffrey. How are you?
I am awesome, Jessica. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. It's exciting.
So tell us a bit about your own company, your own brand that you've been developing to help others unleash all their potential.
Yeah, well, I actually started, I started way back in the fitness industry, and going from the fitness industry, I transferred into coaching and I kind of really fell in love with the art of coaching and what that did to people, and that was back in 2004, and since then, I just had my own full-time coaching business, and over the last several years, after doing that for a while, a huge passion came over me as I started interacting with other coaches who were trying to get their businesses off the ground but just weren't successful with it. So I was kind of looking at what were the elements of, you know, my success in my coaching business, and at the time, you know, for the past like 10 years or so. And the things that I realized that it was a lot of people, they're, you know, when it comes to entrepreneurship, they're not entrepreneurs, they are employees. Most people are in a 9-to-5 job, and that's the way they've been kind of like bred, if you will. And becoming an entrepreneur is a completely different animal than becoming an employee. And so there's the mindset of an entrepreneur, but then there's also the skill sets of an entrepreneur, and one of which is selling. And that's something that early on in my business world, I started really becoming curious about, and the mentors and coaches that I've worked with, you know, that was a really big element to what they taught. And that's what I learned. And I realized it's like, wow, you know what? You know, if you're starting looking at a coaching business or whatever your business is, the reality is it's like 10% coaching, if you will, or 10% of the actual art of what you do. And the rest of it is, you know, marketing and selling and entrepreneurship. And so that's where I shifted over the last 6 months or so, really going into it, is teaching the art of selling and how that art can allow them to create a profitable business. Because until we start to learn that skill set, it's like it's hard to be successful. And I love it because it's just what I naturally gravitate to, and it's just a passion of mine as well.
That's great. And, you know, that was one of the things when I first met you, you know, we've had some contact online in some of our own business groups. And it's crazy because this is the first time we're actually speaking live.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I first met you, one of the things that really drew me to you was that the techniques you were describing in terms of selling weren't your typical kind of sleazy, forcing, salesy pitches. They were really respectful, assertive, ways to build relationships with people. And I think in terms of the coaching world, it becomes very difficult because we're here in a helping profession, and that selling becomes so extraordinarily difficult because we want to help people, but we don't want to feel like they feel they're being sold to or forced or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a common challenge with people is that, you know, it is a service type industry where we're helping people and we have this gift and we want to help people, but it's like, how do we get it out there? How do we do that? And the challenging part of it is that, you know, our whole experience with selling and sales typically comes from just, if you will, like you said, the stereotypical place where the things that we don't like, and it's like we don't want to be perceived as pushy and we don't want to put pressure on people. And we don't want to, like, you know, be shoving things down people's throat that they, you know, they're not interested in. And so there's this block that we have as entrepreneurs. It's like, well, you know, even if someone's, you know, engaging with us and talking with us or agrees to have, let's say, a complimentary call with us, et cetera, or take a closer look at our product or service, oftentimes, you know, we get to the end of that call or the end of that place, and it's like we freeze up. I remember when I started off, like, I'd be, like, freezing up. Like, well, I don't know what to do next. And so starting to understand some components along the way that can make it a lot easier. And like you said, that's what I aim to do with people is I want to make it simple and fun because it doesn't have to have that pressure and that the stereotypical sales piece to it. And it's a lot of it is just, at the end of the day, it's creating relationships and getting to know where people are in their lives and what they're looking for.
Right. And knowing that, you know, if they're looking for you, whether you sell at the end of your call or later on, people do come back as long as they're treated respectfully.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you know, I've learned from people and what I've gravitated towards with mentors and coaches that I've worked with and just have followed is they were very giving in the sense that, you know, they gave a lot of value for what they were doing. And yeah, they had a lot of great products and services that they sold. But the biggest thing is they always were out for, you know, helping me in anything that I came into contact with, especially a lot of the free stuff. I was always like, wow, like, I can't believe how much, you know, they're giving me. I can't believe how much, like, they're telling me exactly what to do. And that made it a lot more valuable. And they took the time to share themselves. I knew who they were as a person, not just, you know, as a business person. A lot of people in business today, you know, you don't really know who they are. You don't know, do they have kids? Do they, you know, what do they like to do on their downtime? Things like that. And I appreciated that aspect of that. So it's starting to build stronger relationships with people and keeping that personal touch. Whereas, like, get to know people. And obviously, you know, as you grow and grow, you can only get to know people so well. But especially as they start to come into your world, into your audience, it's like, take the time to get to know them and ask them some questions and inquire about their business. And people respect that. And those things go a long way, especially in the virtual world where it's just a lot of people are just going for numbers.
Yeah.
And, you know, numbers are okay, yeah. But it's like, I'd rather have a smaller number with a lot more loyal people, because in the end, that's just going to result in a strong, long-lasting business. And that's the key to it is we want to create a strong business.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. I kind of relate it to, you know, pop stars. You know, the pop stars that climb the charts really, really quickly and have this huge following, like, out of the blue. And then within a year, they're gone. There's nothing sustainable with them, whereas you have the other, you know, pop stars or musicians that climb really slowly and steadily and stably, but their following is so secure that their career goes on and on and on because people are loyal and want more and want to hear more. It's not just a fad.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I love doing with people as they come in is as they, you know, engage with me is, you know, find out who they are. But I want to find out, you know, what are they looking for and where they're at in their business. And I want to engage with them and I want to promote them. I want to encourage them. I want to challenge them and push them. And I want to give them some really valuable things that they can benefit from. And also something that's unique. And I think that's where a lot of entrepreneurs are scared is that, like, what makes me unique? You know, like, why am I unique in the world where, you know, there's like so many other people out there kind of seemingly doing the same thing that I'm doing.
Right. So I come from a background of psychology, psychotherapy, that kind of therapy world. Yeah. And it's been an interesting transition and crossover branching into the online world for me, because the things that, you know, the free giveaways and the, you know, free intro coaching calls or discovery calls, you know, in the therapy world, that's really frowned upon. And at the same time, I get phone calls every day from therapists who are really struggling within their business. As much as mental health and emotional health is this big, huge topic, the majority of therapists are really struggling and not being able to make a full-time living. What would be some things you would suggest? Like, what's your take on the discovery calls and the free content and the reasoning behind all of that?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, and I'm not as familiar. I've had my own experiences with the therapy side for myself. But, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to, like, a complimentary call and giveaways, like, the point is to be able to, you know, people need to understand the value of what we're offering. You know, at the end of the day, when we're in business, how we create income is we have products and or services that we offer to people, right? So everyone has a product or service, and we sell it for money, right? And all that really means, all money is it's value-based. It's just an exchange. It's like you give me something and I give you something, and we agree that this exchange is valuable for the both of us. In the case of a product or a business or a product or a service, we're exchanging that for money, and we're saying, hey, I'm going to give you this in exchange for this sum of money, and if you find that valuable, you're happy with that purchase, right? So I'm trying to, like, break it down for us. And so we offer value to people, and so people first need to understand the value with what we're offering, because obviously there's a lot of different options out there, and, you know, the average consumer might not be aware of exactly what's out there. We're in the online world, you know, like as business owners, and we're connecting in different groups and platforms where we see everything that's out there, or a whole lot of that's out there. We see a lot of other people doing similar things to what we do. And so sometimes it can be scary for us being like, wow, there's so many people out there. But on the reality is the average consumer is, unless they're a researcher, you know, they're not going to know of all these options. They typically are going to look within their network or their social connections or asking other people in their networks, you know, hey, I'm looking for something like this. Who have you used? Or I know you did this before. So their options maybe aren't as vast, let's say, as we think that is. But at the end of the day, whatever options they have in front of them, whether it's one, two, or a whole bunch, is they have to understand the value that we offer and the value in terms of where are they at in their world and how it's going to benefit them and their life and what they're looking for. And so When it comes to just free offers, for instance, it's for us, it's offering something that's going to kind of get people into our world for free. You know, it's going to kind of, what are we doing that's attracting them? And it could be something that of how we are, our energy, the title that attracts them initially. It's our pacing. It's our tone. It's something in the content that rings true to them at that moment in time. Because it's, when it comes to the art of selling, it's all about timing. Everyone has a need, but how's the timing of that? So they might be scrolling through whatever, Facebook, and they see something and go, huh, what's this? And something catches their eye, and next thing you know, hey, it's a free offer, and then they subscribe, and now they become your database. And if you're giving them something that they listen or watch or read or whatever it is, you know, for free, and they're like, wow, this is really good, that's kind of like their way into your system. And then we have different level tier products. Ideally, as we grow in entrepreneurship, we might have a $20 book. We might have a $47 product, and then all the way up to maybe a more of a premium coaching package type of thing. So there's tiers of business of products that we have. But the initial free offer is the intent is to say, hey, here's what I offer for value. Here's a little kind of like a little sampling of what I teach. It's just, how about this? It's no different than you walk into a supermarket and they have, you know, sometimes they'll have like someone giving samples, right? And you try it and you go, oh, that was pretty good. And then you may or may not buy it. Depends on the mood you're in and what you're looking for. But it's no different from what we offer. But when it comes to more of a premium product or service like coaching, like when we're meeting with people, even if it's in a small group or especially one-on-one, and I can see how a therapist would struggle with this as well if they're not doing that or if it's frowned upon, because this is something that people are investing in. And, you know more in terms of the therapy world where, I don't know what, if it's covered under insurance and they're just paying a copay. So in something like that, there's less value for the person because they're not actually paying for it, right? I'm paying a 10, 20, whatever dollar copay for something. But in the coaching world, if you're hiring a mentor coach, you might be paying $100, $150, $200, you know, $500, $1,000, and even more for a coaching session, depending on who you're working with. And so for someone to get a feel for, you know, who is this person? What's their style? How do I work well with them? How does it feel when I'm talking to them? You know, some people naturally click more than others, if you will. Some people like other people's styles a little better. So the value in that is paramount in terms of us being able to, you know, showcase what we do and for that person to get a really good feel for it. And that place right there, that session, that call that's complimentary, is the place where value is built. That's the biggest thing. Value is built in that call. And when there's enough value built in that call and in that potential client with that relationship and they feel like, wow, I really want to work with this person or I can't see how I would succeed without this person, that's when they're willing to pay more of a premium for a coaching service. And that's why those calls are so very important is like if I break it down really and saying it's where we build the most value for that person.
I love that. I love that structure of, you know, within that call, having someone not be able to see how to do, offering so much value that, someone says, I have to work with you. And I think that is amazing because I don't think we think about it in those terms. A lot.
Go ahead.
I think sometimes when people are doing their discovery calls, especially people who have been in the online world for a while, it's kind of what you said before. You're working on numbers instead of relationships. So you sometimes lose sight of why you're actually doing the call. You know, you're actually here to help people and to move people forward. And to show what, you know, you have to offer and the value that you give to people within their everyday lives.
Yeah, and the challenge, I think, with a lot of people that do discovery calls or callmetric calls, whatever they call them, is that, to me, it's not like to teach is I don't just give out those calls. Like, I just don't give the calls to anybody. I want to qualify the person. I want to find out, like, if they're saying yes to it and that, yes, they're interested in having one of those calls, no matter what the length is, I want to find out, well, what's their motivation for wanting the call? You know, what are they looking for? What do they hope to achieve from it? Are they considering working with a coach right now? And why are they looking for someone like that? And why is the timing right for something like that in their life? You know, when we start to qualify those people a little bit more and understand their motivation for it, that's when we're going to have a better success rate. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, a portion of, let's say, someone's business in this arena, if we're talking about in the coaching world, is we have clients, right? So we can have income from product sales, from events, from a whole bunch of different places, but a significant source of our income is from our coaching clients, if that's the model that you take. And so these calls that we're giving away, you know, they should be calls where we're talking with people who are interested in potentially working with us. And that's what I really stress when I talk to people that are growing that type of a business is, you know, don't just be giving your time away. Is find out, you know, if you're offering it to someone, why are you offering it to somebody? You know, when I invite someone to a complimentary call, the only reason why I invite them and bring that up as a suggestion is because based on our conversation, whether it be virtual or in person, that I've now heard a need of theirs. And not only have I heard a need of theirs, meaning they're looking to do something that I know I could assist them with, but more importantly, that the timing is right. And not only have I heard it from them, but I've also clarified it with them and said something along the lines of, hey, you know, it sounds as if that you're looking to, you know, grow your business, or you're looking to really make a change and, you know, start your business off right or whatever. Is that true? And it sounds like now's the right time for you. Because, and I kind of repeat back to them what they've said, and they're like, absolutely. And that's when I make that transition and say, hey, listen, have you ever considered working with a coach? Or have you ever considered working with someone like myself who can assist you through that process so you can do it not only more efficiently but faster and with more ease? Some transition like that. And if there's interest, I'm only bringing it up based on what I've heard from them and clarified from them. So you can see, Jessica, how it makes a big difference is now they're coming into it because I've brought it up for a reason and I've invited them in for that reason, but then they've accepted. But they not only accepted, but they've also proven to me that they want it by answering some of those questions. And yeah. Now what happens is I'm on the line with somebody and they're under the mindset of I'm going to be having a call with Jeff because I'm interested in working with him. I'm interested in hiring him. I'm going to be talking on the call with, let's say, Jessica, because through our conversation, she's got a need and the timing of it's right now. And I've asked her specifically, would she consider working with me? Is that an interest of hers? And she said, yes. And so now do you see the difference? So now you're coming to the call and we're both on the same mindset of, hey, this is like a trial call where it's like, yeah, I'm going to coach you. And we're going to have a good 45 minutes of coaching, and we're going to move you forward. And at the end, if you feel like, you know, this is valuable to you and like, wow, I want to work with you, then let's talk about what that would be and how you could hire me. And if it's not, that's okay. You know, wish you the best and send you on your way. And that's really the art of bringing them to that person, to that call. And now what you're going to have a lot less calls. But the calls you have, you're going to be getting clients from. Out of 10 complimentary calls that I do, I'll get 9 clients. And it's only because I don't get to the complimentary session unless I've gone through a pretty rigorous, it's not intense, but just even some of the things that I've said, I go back and forth to that person, and I'm just very careful in who I invite and also making sure I'm not doing it too quickly before I find out really what their needs and wants are and the timing of those.
And I think that, you know, it's so important because within the coaching world, you know, we see people in competitions get 40 discovery calls on your calendar this month, or get this much, or do this or do that. And really, it doesn't matter how many discovery calls you have if your clients are not qualified and the right clients, you're going to end up wasting a lot of, and I shouldn't say wasting a lot of time, but taking a lot of your own valuable time and not moving yourself or your business forward with anything that's going on.
Yeah. And you know what? You are wasting your time, though. In a lot of ways, you are wasting it because you're not valuing it, number one. You're not valuing other people's time. And what's happening is you're setting yourself up, which this is the worst part for us as entrepreneurs, is we're setting ourselves up for disappointment and frustration. And when you're having a comp metric goal, whatever it is, you get excited, right? Because you're thinking like, well, I have someone I'm going to talk to. And we get excited because, well, yeah, they can hire us. And so we can create some income, which is fantastic. We deserve to do that in our business. But also it's like I get to use my gift of coaching or whatever it is I do with someone, and I get to help them. It's like that's why I have my business, right? It's like I get paid to do something I absolutely love and help people. Like, what better thing could I do? But it's a false sense of, like, excitement because you really don't have a potential client. You just have someone who's just said yes because maybe they're just afraid to say no. Or you just show up and then someone doesn't show up because they're just afraid to say no. Because you didn't take the time to really find out who they are and you're just trying to book calls versus take the time to get to know people and where they are and create a relationship. Because if it happens too early and you book these calls and then they just kind of fizzle out or don't really go anywhere, which the majority of them won't if they're not well qualified, what you risk is you risk losing that person for good. And versus if you've taken the time to connect with them, understand where they are, if you're not really finding anything where they're really like coming back at you or there's a great need that you really feel you can assist them with, now you just connect with them, get to know them, and now they're in your system, they're on your database, they get your emails, they're in your group, and they're whatever, they access your free information in whatever platforms and places you put that out, and they become a fan of yours because, like I said, they might have a need, but the timing might not be right for it. The timing's a key piece to it. So now they're in your system, if you will, and they're consuming your free stuff, and they're becoming fans. And then what happens is when the timing's right and something changes, or one day they wake up and go, oh, God, I really need some help with this, and boom, all of a sudden your email comes in, or boom, all of a sudden a message comes in from the Facebook group, or however, you know, you're staying in front of them, and they go, oh, yeah, Jessica. It's not like they forgot about you, but you're in front of them. It's just like why does Best Buy or whatever company, you know, or Staples, why do they put a flyer, an advertisement in, if you get the newspaper anymore, or you know, things that go in the mailbox or whatever, every Sunday or every whatever it is, every single week. And what, 99% of the time it gets tossed in the trash by 99% of the people. But they do it because for that one time when I'm like, oh, I want to buy I got to buy a new flat screen, and all of a sudden I get that thing and I just take it and I throw it out, but all of a sudden I see Best Buy in there. I go, oh, yeah. And all of a sudden I start to look through it, and next thing you know, I'm down at Best Buy buying a TV. It's because I'm in front of them. And that's the key to it. But if we go too early, then all of a sudden we're risking they're not getting into our system. And then they might feel pressure because we're moving too quickly, or, you know, we're asking them to buy something when they're like, I didn't know I was coming to this call to buy something. I just thought I was just going to have a free call to talk about whatever.
And I think I think that's what keeps both coaches and clients in this negative spiral. Because if a client is coming on a call not knowing what to expect, not understanding that they're going to be sold to at the end of the call, or not understanding the purpose of the call, they're going to feel pressured at the end of it. And vice versa, as a coach who is doing the call, when the call doesn't end up with a new client, often it's the coach that becomes depressed or starts doubting themselves, or, you know, something's not quite right. And often what people do is they end up giving up.
Yeah. That's the key there. And that's, and when it comes to selling, that's the hard part, is that the potential client coming on, they don't know they're a potential client. And in fact, they're not a potential client, or they might not be, most likely, because the coach didn't take the time to qualify them. So now all of a sudden, if the coach is like saying, hey, so do you want to work with me, or do you want to hire me, or whatever they're doing at the end of the call, the person on the other end, if the expectation wasn't set and both understood it and both agreed that this is why we're doing this, now that person feels like they're being sold in the manner with which we don't want to be perceived of, if you will, the sleazy type selling, because now it's like, you're trying to sell me something? Like, what? Where did this come from? And,
right.
And that's exactly what we fear, but this is what we end up doing because of a lack of understanding of the process and why we're doing these things and the objective to it.
Right. And as an entrepreneur, it's our own fears that end up holding us back a lot.
I agree. It's our own fears. It's the things we tell ourselves inside of our heads. And a lot of it just comes down to us being able to understand business. And that's why, like when I said, if you will, a coaching business, for instance, it's like 10% coaching, right? It's 10% coaching, and the rest is the business aspect of it. So when we start to understand that, and we work with some good mentors and work with some people and have good role models, we work through those beliefs, not necessarily by coaching ourselves, that's a component of it, but more importantly, taking action and doing those things so we can learn that those beliefs aren't real, because they're not real. They're just the things that hold us back.
Exactly. I'm just going to take a moment and go into our call-in lines. If you have a question for Jeffrey, please call us at 646-716-7979. We would love to take your questions. I think we have a question on the line here, so let me just check in and see. Hello?
Hello. This is Greg from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Greg. Do you have a question for Jeffrey?
I was listening, but I think I would like to know what kind of hurdles has he had in trying to start, you know, these businesses that, you know, have just come around recently that aren't really well known. Like, is there a set formula?
So
I mean, I've been doing at least on my own a lot of spiritual and meditative work.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be involved with ministry related things in the past, but they really didn't work out because that thing is just, it happens every once in a while in churches and things like that, but it really isn't promoted and they don't really work every day.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, like, how to build something like that out.
So how to build a coaching practice from the beginning.
Yeah, is there a set formula or a specific book?
Yeah, so Greg, it sounds like you have a more of a unique niche, if you will. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's just my experiences with people who are doing similar things is that they either enter into this by being a preacher, which is not what I want to do, or you have certain prayer coaching type ministries, but they seem to be more supported by family members.
Right.
And, you know, and that's really the struggle I've been working with. How do you get to people that traditionally will only receive something like that when it's available or whenever a guest speaker is invited. You know, I know that for my own development, I've had to really think outside the box. I got involved with some different conference calls and things like that. But it's really hard to build something out.
Yeah. Well, number one thing I'd say is that if you're having, it sounds like you, what your model is like in terms of what you want to be doing with people is very specific, right?
Yeah.
And so the best thing I'd say right off the bat is see who's out there who's doing something as close to what you want to do as possible. And this is the biggest thing is that you've got to find someone. I mean, there's a lot of people doing things in the same, let's say, from a 30,000-foot view maybe. But as you get down to it a lot closer, there's a lot it's a lot more specialized, it sounds like, without even knowing all the details. It sounds like a lot more specialized and a lot more unique. And therefore, it's starting to understand, well, who's doing it and who's doing it well. So the reason you do that is to start to understand, like, well, what are they doing? What do I like? What don't I like? What's worked for them? When it comes to business, the thing that I've always looked at is like it's everything's been done for before. When I say everything, it's not like I'm saying, oh, nothing else. You know, we're still waiting for things to be – things can't be done. That's new. It's more of just like there are so many people out there that have created great success in different areas, and they've done it with different models. And each person might – there might be similar threads, but it's like they have understood what's worked for them in certain arenas. So – by you finding someone, you know, it's like when you said what books, you know, one of the things I do with my clients when we're starting to, you know, narrow down their niche, et cetera, you know, in terms of their message and who it's for, is it's like, hey, let's, if you were trying to find someone that could help you with what you're looking to help people with, what would you search for? You know, fire up Google and, or your preferred web browser and just type, what do you type in? And not only just type it in, but leave a cookie trail or a breadcrumb trail, if you will, so that each link you click on, you know, either do a screencast, meaning like you're kind of recording your screen so you can know where you get to, or just kind of write down some links that you found or things that you've typed in that brought up either the books or the websites or the people on different social platforms that are doing those things. So now you start to understand what, you know, what some of your keywords are. That can go into your branding and into the language with which you use on your website and your products, et cetera. You can see what people are doing at what different levels. What books have they written? What products are they selling? You can connect with those people, potentially, you know, work with them, hire them, and start to understand the business model and what makes it successful. And then you can start to see how you can bring that into your world. Okay. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the problems I had was when I started out, the internet was still fairly young and it wasn't as easy to navigate. But in recent years, yeah, I mean, everything that you're saying should work much better now. Yeah. I just have to come to the point where I know I'm motivated to do personal development because it's easy to do on your own. And I have to come to the point where I really want to lay out the groundwork to, you know, build beyond that. So thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck, Greg.
Okay,
yeah, good.
You too.
I'm just going to jump in there for one second. And I think sometimes even talking about the personal work and getting out there, talking about your own experience and your personal work, that helps a lot of people start formulating a quote-unquote, you know, fan base or a tribe base. But it helps people start to relate to you, and it helps you to start talking about your message and what's important to you and finding what you're passionate about. We always want to look for that proven model. And I think sometimes there's no proven model because it really shifts from person to person. And the most important thing is to find what's authentic for you. Thanks, Greg. That was a great question.
Thank you.
So, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Favorite books? That's a good question. Do you have any favorite books?
Yeah, so for me, like, my journey with personal development was started early, and I would say that I'm actually not a book person. I'm not a reader. Like, I've read books, I'm an audio person. So I'll listen to books on audio, et cetera, but a lot of audio courses. And the things that have resonated with me the most have come through some of my mentors. And specific mentors is my mentor I've worked with in the past. His name's Jeffrey Combs. And that's where I learned the majority of selling and the art of it and the psychology behind it. He's got some great CD courses called The Psychology of Closing, The Psychology of Prospecting, The Psychology of Questions or Asking, because that's the art of understanding really where people are and getting down to kind of where they are in their thought process. So those are some really big CD courses that I've listened to. And then there's another mentor of mine, Jim Rohn. I don't know, you might have heard of him. He's actually not alive anymore, but Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N is his name, his last name. And he was completely responsible for kind of changing my philosophy. I believe, you know, everything we do is rooted in our philosophy. It's kind of the way we think, which leads to our beliefs, which leads to our actions. And so, if we don't like our results in life, we can all back it up to our philosophy, right? And so Jim Rohn has some great courses like The Day That Turned Your Life Around, and things like that, The Art of Exceptional Living. And it's just, he comes from Napoleon Hill days of just a little bit older than Napoleon Hill type of thing. And where the godfathers of personal development, if you will, Anthony Robbins, his mentor was Jim Rohn, for instance, to give you an idea of who this guy is. And a lot of the philosophies and his teachings are they're so fundamentally simple, but yet they're just so powerful in the way he tells it. And so those are some of the things that I attribute a lot of where my philosophy comes from and the skill sets of selling and et cetera that I bring into my world. Is those two people have been really, really influential in my life.
Those sound great. I haven't heard of any of those, so I will definitely check it out.
Yeah.
I love books. I love courses. So I find all of that very, very interesting. So can you tell us a bit more? So you started off in the fitness realm and then did a career change to more of the coaching realm. Tell us about, that life moment where you knew there was something more, where you knew there was, you could do more, or you were passionate about something else. What was there a moment that hit you, or was there, a series of events where you kind of went, it's time for life to change a little bit?
Well, you know what? It was actually, back in when I went into college, I had a really poor self-esteem, a really poor belief structure. I came from an awesome family, so it's not like, oh, my parents, whatever. I had awesome friends. I had awesome family. I had awesome role models in my life. It was just I just had a really poor self-esteem. I wasn't comfortable with myself. I was overweight. I just wasn't happy with myself. I never felt like I fit in. And that's just where I came from. And I felt like I was in a stereotype through high school. And then when I was going to college, it felt really fresh for me because it's like, well, no one knows, who Jeff St. Laurent is, right? They're just like, they have no impression upon me. And so I went into there thinking, I'm like, oh, now I can just kind of start fresh. But of course, all that negative stuff, if you will, kind of in those beliefs carried over with me. But what really started to change me was exercise. And that's why I became passionate about health and fitness and the body and how it responds. Is I was just amazed that when I started working out with some of my friends in college, I'm like, wow, it's just my body is changing and I'm feeling better and I'm getting stronger and I'm becoming leaner and like, well, girls are starting to notice me now, and it was just different for me. And so, like, my physical body started to change, and of course, that changed a lot of the way I thought about things. But I worked really hard on the outside, if you will, but then I had to start working hard on the inside, because while I made a physical transformation, and it did help with my thought process, I had to start to understand my beliefs, et cetera, and that's where I got into personal development and started listening to people like Jim Rohn and Tony Robbins and things like that. And I started to understand mindset and behaviors and, like I said, philosophy. And that coupled with the physical work, I call it the mind-body, you know, healthy mind, healthy body, was one of the first courses that I produced, an 8-CD audio course. And the mind-body connection and the power of that and how that translates into not only just our world, but ultimately into our business. Really, it's never any one moment per se. It's like, it's a series of things that happen, and that begins this, you know, this transformation. And for me, that's what it was. It was starting to work out and realizing, you know, the potential. And then even there from in school, going into starting to study about exercise science, exercise physiology, and the human body, and the adaptation process, and how the body moves, like kinesiology, et cetera. And I was actually passionate about something for the first time around education, and I was actually good at something. I would actually get an A without trying because I just went to class, you know? And I paid attention because I wanted to, and realizing that I'm like, wow, this is like I'm good at something. And those are really some of the, there's probably a few of those moments in there, but that's where I started to become engaged in something that I was passionate about. And those are the beginning stages of what has brought me here to today.
Wow, that's great. And was business always something you were interested in?
Yeah, I've always been, I'd say, psychologically unemployable. In the sense that I just, you know, I worked at a supermarket through, you know, college and a little bit of high school, but a lot of that was I just did landscaping and painting and just stuff like that. So I would just like kind of bill hours. So like from very small, like that's just where I was, and it was technically my own business, you know, and I always enjoyed that so much better than, you know, showing up to the supermarket and punching a clock and having to be there from whatever 3 to 9 or whatever my hours were. So I've always had that, if you will, entrepreneurial spirit. And even coming out of college and getting into some health clubs, et cetera, even though I, quote, had a job there, it wasn't long before I kind of had my own business within that business doing personal training. And so, you know, I've always had that entrepreneurial piece to me. And I swear, like, I just don't know how that, to me, that's the difference between an entrepreneur and an employee, is just like, I just can't ever imagine going to a job and like having to be there for a certain time. And just, it doesn't even make sense to me. I just don't even know how to comprehend it. And, and that's why I value entrepreneurship, because there's, to me, it's like, you can take something. This is the value of it. This is, I guess, capitalism, right? How to create capital. It's like, we can take something and we can make it better, or we can do something and we can actually sell that to somebody else that finds it valuable. Like if you find an old wagon, rusty wagon with a busted wheel on the side of the road, could you take that wagon home and sand it down and find a new wheel and put it on and give it a nice, you know, fresh coat of red paint and make it all shiny? And could you sell that for, you know, whatever, $30, $50? Yeah, that's entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah.
And it's like... like, to me, that's fascinating. Like, that fascinates me. And it kills me as to why people struggle financially, because, you know, if you will, in America, that's the land of opportunity. It's like, well, you could do that. You could take some stuff from your basement and put it on Craigslist, and you could make some money to buy the thing that you want to buy that you don't have the money for or whatever. So there's ways of using your creativity and your thoughts. And in the case of us with coaching, et cetera, is we're using it in a different form, but creating courses or things like that, or even like this radio show, you know, it's like assisting people with different ways. But that's where, to me, entrepreneurship, the magic of it. And I feel like the future, there's going to be a lot more of that, because the jobs are less reliable. They're a lot more scarce. and the mindset of the younger generations is different, and they have different ideas, and they're going to see the world in a whole different way. And entrepreneurship is, I just feel like it's going to be a, especially with the platform of the internet, it's going to be such a great vehicle for people.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% there.
Yeah.
You've said a few times the different mindset between an entrepreneur and an employee. What, for people listening who aren't quite sure the difference, other than, you know, as an entrepreneur, you don't have a job to go to, and as an employee, you do. I saw a video you did, and you had some really clear distinctions between the two, and it was a great video. So what for you is that difference?
Yeah, you know, it's a mindset of, as an entrepreneur, we get paid for results, not time. That's a key distinction right there is, you know, I can sit in my office for 8 hours and I could do whatever I do, but if I don't create any results, which relate to creating income, I don't get paid. Whereas I can just show up to my job and I'm there for the same, let's say, 8 hours. And, you know, I could just chat on the internet all day. And granted, if I keep doing that enough, I'll get fired, you know. But just by showing up for those 8 hours, I'm going to get my paycheck or my salary. So that's a key distinction right there, is understanding it's like, well, what are those activities in our business that will produce us revenue, that are going to produce us those results? So that's a key piece right there to understand that. Otherwise, we tend to drift, and we, as entrepreneurs, can find ourselves consumed with activities that maybe, while important, aren't the right ones that are going to get us out there and get us in front of people and get us paid. And oftentimes, those are the activities we kind of fool ourselves into the fact that we're being busy. And so that mindset piece, I would say, is probably the number one distinction. But then there's also the mindset of, if you will, the safety and the security piece. And, well, I've got a job and I've got benefits and things like that. And an entrepreneur really understands that, you know, they're responsible. It's more of a personal responsibility versus relying on somebody else or something else to support them. So as an entrepreneur, like you're saying, I'm relying on myself and I'm taking on the responsibility of providing for myself and my family. And nothing can change that. Like, the economy can't change my business, and it might affect your business, but it's like, okay, well, understand what's going on and where do you have to shift or shape your business in order to thrive in that specific economy. You know, go back 8-10 years, and over the last, you know, where the economy was really down. And yeah, I mean, absolutely affected my business and a lot of other businesses as well. But I said to myself, when I'm like, well, is it fair to think that there are other businesses right now that are doing incredibly well? I'm like, absolutely. Well, what are they doing? Because we're all in the same economy, right? So what's the difference between the person who says, like, oh, this economy sucks and I can't survive, or I'm broke, or I'm whatever, and the same person in the same economy that says, this is the best year we've ever had, right? It's a difference of philosophy, isn't it? And so that's where his understanding is. We have the responsibility. We have the ownership. We have the control. And to me, that's more safe and secure than anything else, because I could just walk into my job one day and next thing you know, I'm getting laid off or something changes. And I have no control over that. Whereas every single day I walk into my office and I have complete control over my income. If I want to create more income or I need more income for something, you know what? Well, I know exactly what I need to do in order to create that. And I can do that. Whereas if I'm in a job, well, I either have to get a second job, or I have to find a way to work overtime, or I have to go ask for a raise. Where is entrepreneurship, and here's another key distinction, is that as entrepreneurs, we get paid for the value that we bring to the market. And as an entrepreneur, we get paid what we're worth, not what the job's worth. So when I get hired for a position at whatever company, I don't get paid for what I'm worth. I get paid for what the job's worth and the salary's worth. You know, so if there's a certain job description and it pays $50,000 a year, it doesn't matter what my background is or what I've done or what skill sets I know or what college I went to or what I've read and developed with. I'm going to get paid $50,000, right? Whereas in my business, I can get paid what I'm worth. So I'm actually putting time and effort into myself and becoming someone of value, because the more value I can provide, I can create a larger income, and therefore I'm going to get paid what I'm worth. And that's what I've noticed, is as I've become more valuable as a person, as a coach, as a you name it, that's where my income has grown, because of my value. And if we want to, like I said, get paid more, it's like, well, become more valuable, do some different things, and that's how you can do that. So those are some key distinctions which separate the two. And that's why a lot of people who don't either naturally think like that or gravitate towards that tend to struggle with entrepreneurship.
Right, because a lot of people don't understand what those key differences are. And I think a lot of people also struggle. I, you know, appreciate you saying understanding the activities that will get you results. Because I think a lot of people struggle with being busy instead of results-oriented.
And that's where it's all based on fears. And at the end of the day, it's about engaging with people. And that's where it comes down to the understanding the sales. Because if all I'm doing is, like, really, if I can boil any business down, like, really any business is acquiring an audience or potential customers, staying in front of those people to continually, you know, by giving them value, and then understanding where they're at to convert them into paid business. Like, that's it. Set at a very, you know, 30,000-foot level, right? It's like,
yeah,
everyone needs to acquire an audience. Best Buy, in my example, they need to acquire an audience. So they either acquire audiences by their commercials, by their flyers that they put out, by whatever type of marketing they do to make you aware of the brand, right? And then as there are people that are aware of it, and then there are people that come in and as customers, and maybe they try and get them on the email. It's just a different model, but so that's what we're looking to do, is we're trying to build an audience. And once we have that audience, everything else is interacting with that audience. And as we interact with that audience, we're finding out where they are in their world and their needs and the timing of those needs. And it's looking to say, hey, are you interested in this? Have you ever considered this? And that's challenging for a lot of people until you understand how to do it. And that's when it makes it fun. And that's where my mission comes in, is I want to teach entrepreneurs that, because like it just makes business so much easier, because now you don't never have to worry about money. You never have to worry about where your next, if you will, paycheck's coming from or where you're going to earn money, because you understand how to create it. And that's the biggest thing. And that's the biggest concern which people get. Fear that transition from a job where I'm going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks or every month or whatever frequency I get paid is like, well, what am I going to do for income? Because as an entrepreneur, you might have a really big month. You might have a really small month, you know, depending on what's going on. But at the end of the day, when you are confident in your abilities and know that, well, if I keep doing X, Y, and Z, I've proven to myself that this is what it works. Based on different times and economies or whatever, I might have to do more or less of X, Y, and Z to produce the same result. But it's always, if you do X, Y, and Z and you understand what those are, you're going to create results. And that's a truth. It's not a myth. You know, it doesn't change.
And that in itself buys you your freedom. As an entrepreneur, you know, you are in charge. It's your responsibility to create and live the life and the business that you want. Jeffrey, it's been so wonderful having you on. We have learned so much from you. For those of you who are listening, if you want to connect with Jeffrey more, which I think you should, he can be reached in his Facebook group called Selling Coaching. And we'll have the links to his website at the bottom of this page. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. It's been a pleasure.
Jessica, it's been a pleasure as well. So thank you for having me on.